before we get into this, it just occurred to me that this part of the podcast, the Chirp with Darren Millard, this opening, the tease, as Bob Bender likes to call it, is the only part that I have full control of. You'll hear the start of the interview with Nick Kyprios where he starts jabbing me right away, and the whole introduction is an absolute disaster, but a fun disaster. You'll get a kick out of it. And then as I have this control of the tease, on the day that we package this is the day that all the landscapers roll through my neighborhood, and I've got to battle leaf blowers going on in the background. So if you hear a buzzing in the background, it's not a swarm of killer hornets. It's just the leaf blowers going. Today, I'm going to catch up with my pal Kipper, who's back on the radio in Toronto, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. He's got a two-hour show there with Justin Bourne, and they're having a lot of fun talking hockey, and we're going to lean on him as our Toronto correspondent. I wait until the very end to tell him that, but we're going to lean on him. He's got a lot of experience in and around the Toronto market, but also we're going to get into the strugglings of Chicago Blackhawks as well as the Maple Leafs, and who gets the table, the last table at a popular New York restaurant, Mark Messier or Henrik Lundqvist. Then we'll also slide over and discuss life with Robin Lehner. And this is an interview that was done before the start of the season, and I'll explain everything that went into our conversation. It doesn't have absolutely anything to do with the controversy and the tweets and everything that happened during the course of training camp. But this is a fun conversation. It deals with why Robin wants to win a Stanley Cup, and it's not the most obvious reason. And we'll also address his potential Olympic involvement with Team Sweden. It's the Chirp with Darren Millard. The leaf blowers are coming. I can hear them in the background. Let's get it going.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
Huzzah! Oh, how'd that feel, old man?
What are you gonna do?
I can't even get through the countdown into the podcast in episode three, and we're already laughing and giggling and making sure. Okay,
Matt Mallard, what are we doing?
We got to get serious. We got to get. Yeah, that's usually how our meetings start. Can I intro the show first, please? I tried to tease it a little bit on the audio version, but here's episode three of the Chirp Podcast for season two, and we're kind of gonna balance things out between National Hockey League people and my buddies. And here's. I guess you're more my buddy than you are a National Hockey League person because you're my buddy, but you're also a National Hockey Leaguer. Nick Kyprios, a Stanley Cup champion, and now back on the Fan 590 in Toronto. Good to chat with you again. Glasses, like a hard weekend. What happened?
All of the above. Are you going to blame me for that? That opening that you just had was less than stellar.
Yes. Well, I'm just. You threw me off by just chiming in. Two things would happen. Mallard, what are we doing? And pen me. Do you have a pen?
Oh, yeah, I do.
You do have a pen.
I do. I'm one by myself. I don't have anybody I can rely on or you know, have somebody say, throw me a lifeline here. It's just me. I'm in my studio at my house. I am back to work at Sportsnet with Rogers, the Fan 590 on a daily basis. Even with you on Hockey Central at noon, I came in every other day, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Now I'm going every day. So can you imagine me every day coming in going, pen me, somebody throw me a pen.
Who's doing your show? Like who's doing the lineup for you?
A gentleman by Sam McKee, who of course in this city, if you're going to work at the Fan 590, you got to be a diehard Leaf fan. So every once in a while, I got to talk him off the ledge when it's really bad. And unfortunately for Leaf fans and Leaf Nation, is not very pretty up here right now for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But it's been a kind of a crazy start in general, right, Darren, in terms of looking at the standings and seeing some top teams at the bottom and seeing some bottom teams at the top, i.e. Buffalo. It's a little crazy. It's a little early, but nonetheless, it raises eyebrows.
Wasn't training camp supposed to take care of all the inconsistency?
Usually it does, but so does the weeks leading up to American Thanksgiving, which we've all focused on now on the percentages of being in or out of the playoffs by that date. So there's still some time to get there, but what I find more intriguing now is the number of guys that are going down. And when you factor in a strange date to finish last season and then to try to restart your calendar with the normalcy of a September, October training camp, which was shorter than anything we've ever had before. And now we're seeing guys drop left, right, and center. COVID, unfortunately, is still a factor in what's happening in this world, including for the Winnipeg Jets with Scheifele and Wheeler. And here you've got a Freaky Friday scenario to start the NHL.
But Nick, there was a full training camp. If this was a year ago and they just went right into it, I could get it. But there's no reason why this should be happening.
When was the Stanley Cup presented, Darren? What were we? End of July, August?
Yeah, but two teams played till then.
No, I know that, but it's still the mindset, though, in general, that your season finishes so late, and guys wanted to almost treat it maybe like a regular summer where they got away, they got to have their fun stuff. I don't know in terms of what training went on compared to the past. I'll give you an example. Peter Mrazek. Like, how does a goalie pull his groin in game one? Like, that should never happen. It's really strange. And the only thing I can look back on it and saying that, you know, from a cycle point of view, it's you're trying to right the ship by having a regular start to the regular time of the season, but the guys seem off. Whether it was because of the training, because of the time that they wanted away from the rink, I'm not sure. But that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
the groin strain. Remember, you used to have to always do those stretches with your leg up on the boards. And
is that what was missing from Peter Mrazek?
I think so. Did you ever have that one minor hockey rink where you go to and the boards were 7 feet tall and you couldn't get your foot up there?
I was the guy that just got on my knees and then just spread my groins apart, and everybody would come by and say, like, that's the same position you used to play when you were a kid when you played marbles, right?
Did you try that with Cooperalls?
I'd split them open, of course, but that would be the playing Marlboro's stretch.
Toronto or Chicago? Who's in worse shape?
Oh, Chicago by a country mile, I think. And because there were zero expectations for this team and
I thought they were going to be good.
Getting Seth Jones and Marc-Andre Fleury, was that enough to completely turn this team around?
Was Doc and Taves back?
Yeah, but Taves is also a year older and also a year off of playing the game as well. And Taves is still a good player, and on some nights he can look really, really good. But I would believe that people still believe that his best days are behind him. And then outside of that, I have not liked this lineup in a long time.
Did you see Jeremy Colliton hand the whiteboard to the players for the 5-on-3?
No, I did.
He explained it pretty well.
Did you see the jokes that followed it on social media?
Yeah.
Like,
how many of those did you come up with?
I really liked the one that said that. What do you guys like to eat? Because, you know, it's funny. Because I in the American Hockey League, you go and play in a play like you go to like Binghamton, right?
Yeah.
And the bus would pull in, we'd play, and then after the game, it's a ghost town there. There's nothing open. So our trainers would have to get the board out just like that one. And it's between the second and the third period, and we're down like 2 goals. And nothing's going right. But then, you know, this board comes around. It's like, what would you like to eat after the game? Would you chicken, a hamburger, or pizza? Because they got to get the order in. And I'm like, this is supposedly the second best professional hockey league in the world. And the game hasn't finished. And I got to make a tough decision right now between a hamburger and chicken.
That was strange. Jeremy explained it out well, but I was still shocked when it happened. Is that the bottom of the barrel for this team, or are they legitimately in serious trouble to have one of those historically bad starts? They haven't led.
Between them and Arizona, I'm not sure who's having a tougher time coming out of their own zone in the first part of this season. But Darren, you know, we like Marc-Andre Fleury a lot. I've liked him a lot. And I think under the right circumstances, he can be a defense or a goalie that can still compete at a high level. But I just don't think Seth Jones is enough. And, you know, a lot of people that pay a lot more attention to the analytics have always suggested that this guy is average in his own zone. And I mean, when I watched that bubbled season 2 years ago and Columbus found a way to beat out the Leafs in the qualifying round, I still watched a guy that looked pretty dominant to me, but he hasn't been very good in his own zone. And at times he looks like he's quite frankly lost. That shouldn't happen for a guy making over $9 million a year. And then after that, you look at Connor Murphy, who I think has struggled at times defensively, and that still should be his forte for the Chicago Blackhawks. And then you get into DeHaan and McCabe and Mitchell. And now I'm like, this is not a blue line for Marc-Andre Fleury. So are they going to be able to turn this thing around and compete for a playoff spot? I don't think so. And if that's the case, then I don't expect Marc-Andre Fleury to finish the season as a Chicago Blackhawk. I would think he'd like one more crack at a cup in his career, and he could quite frankly find himself in six other cities taking one more crack at a cup.
Tell me what the players on the bench are thinking when Colleton hands over the board to the guys on the ice. Are they saying, hey, I've got a plan, I should be out there? Like, give me your take, or what would you do?
I would think that they would already have had a really good indication of what they thought of him before that. And then that would be like the cherry on top of a sundae. I don't see the connection right now between Colleton and his team. I think there's a disconnect. I think it's been there a while. And quite frankly, I think it's only a matter of time before Stan Bowman and the rest of the management team says that we may need a different voice. I don't like to come on your show or my show or any show and start talking about people losing their jobs before it happens, but that's what we do sometimes as analysts. We have to go and speak of what perhaps a coaching change might do to not only Chicago, but any other team. It's part of life. It's part of pro sports. And right now it just seems that that's a topic of conversation that's probably really strong in the Chicago area.
I get what he did though. Like, we've all been there, whether you're a parent or you're a hockey coach or whatever, like nobody's listening to me. You do it then.
Well, Keenan was famous for that. He got so pissed off at us at some times, and he'd just sit back and say, you guys are so smart, you tell me who's up next. And now it was almost like a shinny game where you're on the bench and Adam Graves would put his hand up, look down the bench and go, I've got left wing. Okay. Who's got right? You want to go right this time? Okay, you go right. And this would go on for 10 or 12 minutes. And I'm like, again, this is the NHL and guys are calling out their own positioning. This is where I need my big loud voice to pipe up and say, I've got center. But I didn't.
How many times did Mike do that?
Not very often, but he'd try to make a point. And when he did, it was abundantly clear to everybody how he felt. He was famous for that. I also was on the bench when he tried to make a point to Alex Kovalev by extending his shift to like 9 minutes and he wouldn't let him come off the ice. And he'd point him right back out. You want long shifts? Here, go get another long shift. And then at some point we had to explain to Alex that you're not being rewarded right now.
So he thought he was playing really, really well?
Thought he was playing really, really well. And Mike just didn't want to take him off the ice. But I think he's trying to make a point that your shifts are too long. And that's why he's telling you to stay out there now. But,
you know,
those were the good old days, Darren.
Yeah, that backfires because Kovalev thinks he's being rewarded, and you lose the guy that's the next guy up because he thinks, what the hell did I do wrong?
Yeah, the right side was a little pissed off.
Toronto, how bad is it, buddy?
It's angry. I think we've seen throughout probably the last 40 or 50 years that there would be a sense of disappointment, but it always kind of ended up with the butt of jokes. But this is beyond like being a punchline right now for Leaf fans. They're really upset, and the feeling now that hasn't had in the past over 40 years is that it was never in correlation to how much money they're making. And now it is. So it's just not that Mitch Marner or Austin Matthews are not playing up to their standards or not playing well. It's you're doing that, and you're one of the highest paid players in the league, and you've sucked the salary cap out from underneath Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas, and you're the reason why we couldn't get a better defenseman. You're the reason why
Zach Hyman had
to go get Jack Campbell and ask him to play well for $1 million. And you know that they're getting blamed for a lot of stuff right now that typically players didn't have to deal with in the past. And then you amplify that on social media, and it just feels like these guys have the weight of the world on their shoulders, like other players haven't had in the past. Like I was around for the Toronto Maple Leafs when they had Larry Murphy, and Larry was feeling it with the catcalls. You know, his wife, his family could not sit in the stands because of the comments. And now it's not just avoiding 2 hours for, say, the Marner family. It's being around it 24/7 through social media. So it's a different beast out there for these guys. And you've lived it as a broadcaster, where sometimes 10 bad tweets could feel like 100,000 people. And
don't bring me into this. Don't start piling it on me.
Especially you, Darren, because you pulled me down that rabbit hole. I'm like, it's not me, it's Darren. Why are you lumping me in with Darren? But you know, to just get back on it, this is something that's really hard for these 22 and 23 year olds, because the perception is out there, well, if you got the guts to ask for 11.6, then you should have, you know, the stomach to handle the onslaught right now. And it's not really quite how it works for kids who might not be, you know, built to have that thick skin that you need in places like Toronto and Chicago and Montreal. It's a tough sled right now for these guys.
Well, Sheldon Keefe seems to be a guy that has that thick skin to be able to handle it. How much of the blame is directed towards him at this point?
Well, I think he's feeling it, no question. And this is still new to him at the NHL level in this market. I think Friday was a pretty good example. He got a little salty with a few of the questions, and it was around Nick Ritchie, who, of course, has had a couple of opportunities to play well in Anaheim and Boston, and both those organizations quit on him. Now he comes in and really was labeled as the guy to replace Zach Hyman, who has gone on to a great start along with the Edmonton Oilers, and Connor McDavid's on fire. And that's looking great. And that's, again, not helping Toronto fans when Nick Ritchie is not off to a good start and doesn't appear to be a guy that can replace Zach Hyman's 17, 18, sometimes plus 20 minutes a night. So Sheldon basically had come out and said, listen, I know you guys are all over Richie, but you know, he was also on a line that didn't play well in Marner and Matthews. You should be asking those questions equally. And I was okay with that. Right.
Really?
I mean, Marner and Matthews are big boys at this point. They are go-to guys. They're underperforming. They can handle that. They can handle that heat. So, you know, more importantly, Darren, for Sheldon is trying to find these guys a rhythm and a place where they can succeed and open up. And right now, Matthews pointless in three games. Marner just the one assist and a power play that absolutely stinks and looks boxed right in. So this is on Sheldon Keefe. This is on his staff to find avenues and vehicles that can open up for their game to succeed. And ultimately, if he can't, then it falls on him. And then the domino effect will creep into Kyle Dubas and ultimately Brendan Shanahan as well. But that's still a ways away. There's a lot of people up here that want Sheldon gone and Kyle gone. And we've been around long enough to know that doesn't necessarily mean anything in five or six games to start a season.
Now you've got a voice in that on the radio.
Darren, I go down my corner, Tim Hortons, and I got a voice. Okay. I mean, I always have a voice.
Does Sheldon do enough to, I know you said that the star players can handle it, but I mean, there's a protecting your star players aspect to this too, isn't there?
Yes. And that's come into question for sure. And in terms of these players now, they, you know, especially Marner, Matthews is for good reason. He won the Rocket Richard. He's regarded as the best goal scorer on the planet, even better than Ovechkin up here. There's a sense that he is better insulated and better protected than a guy like Mitch Marner. And Mitch is the local boy that did well, that a lot of people said over exceeded with his $10.9 million. But his numbers actually do support a contract in that vicinity. I'm not sure if I would have given it to him, but his numbers are historically some of the best numbers ever to start a career with the Toronto Maple Leafs and a top five scorer last year. And his numbers to start his career are up there with some of the best first overall picks. So, but Leaf fans will never understand that, a lot of them, that just look at him as the main culprit for sucking the salary cap dollars to the point where you can't improve the blue line or you can't get a better replacement than Nick Ritchie for Zach Hyman. And if you're not careful, Darren, you don't show that you're backing up your players and showing support, then you'll just dig the hole deeper on a guy like Mitch Marner. I think he's a guy that really could use some support right now from other players or
what would you say to him?
Or general manager to say, back off, just back off this guy. He's good and he's going to continue to be great for us. And back off. You know, if Brian Burke was still here, that's the type of thing Brian would do.
Yeah. He'd hold a news conference to either talk about something totally different that would have people talking, or he'd go right to bat with him. Oh, Jack Eichel. Does he play this year?
I would think cooler heads would prevail, and there would be a real push to end this nonsense. And the first thing I would do is just let him get the surgery that he wants.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Well, they should reconsider it, Darren. They need to get him healthy, and they need to get him back on the ice. And if it means eating crow and putting him back in a Buffalo Sabres uniform, then so be it. But it's hard to trade for a guy that you're trading as if he's not hurt.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen. The value that you perceive him at today, the market value you perceive to him and what the market actually is telling you are two different things for Kevin Adams. So you're going to continue to let an asset dwindle to nothing by staying home, or you work towards getting it back on the ice to show people that he's healthy, he's ready to go. And if you need to put him back in a Buffalo Sabre uniform for a week or two to show everybody that this guy is still as great as ever, then ask for the moon. But you can't do it right now when he hasn't even had the surgery. So it's a mess. But if you ask me, if I was Kevin Adams, I'd say have the surgery.
That's a lot of crow. Like we're talking two or three helpings. We're talking Thanksgiving, okay, going back to the tray and stuffing and a lot.
Look at our career, me and you. We've eaten a ton of crow and yeah, we're still standing. Kevin Adams will be fine.
Will the owner be fine with it?
That's your $80 million asset right now that's bringing you zero value. Mm-hmm. So how can you not be okay with it? This is your best chance to take 60 cents on the dollar, 70 cents on the dollar, or maybe if the surgery is great and he's feeling awesome, you can take 100 cents on your dollar. But right now it's a zero. So how can you not convince the Pegulas that this still has the best chance to save our asset?
And you're off to a good start. So do it now while you've got some good vibes going.
I totally agree with you. It's by strength, not by desperation. You actually look stronger now to be able to make this decision because the team is going well and you can show that you can compete without them. But think about value that you would bring in to support now a Kyle Okposo who's playing a lot better and a young player like Casey Mittelstadt. And now you're in a position where you're going to add to those guys already feeling good and you're ready to move on, but can't move on like this.
Does the grievance thing even a path towards resolution, or does it go deeper into the courts if Buffalo doesn't budge?
What are you grieving?
I don't know.
According to the CBA, Buffalo is technically correct in saying you cannot have the surgery unless we finalize it. That is written in stone in the CBA. So, and teams won't necessarily give you full value until I can feel very comfortable that I'm not trading for a guy that'll disappear in 2 months. So, as far as the surgery is concerned, I get that Buffalo is apprehensive. I get it, but so was the LA Dodgers when Tommy John had Tommy John surgery. I mean, it's called Tommy John for a reason. He went first. So Jack Eichel needs to go first. This is how medicine moves forward. Somebody's always got to go first on a new procedure. Just anoint Jack Eichel, this new surgery. And then maybe in 2 or 3 years, you got six guys saying, I'm going to have the Jack Eichel surgery.
That might be the smartest thing you've ever said. Most on the money thing you've ever said. In 2 years, somebody's going to have the Eichel surgery.
That's the way medicine works. You advance it. You have new surgeries. Why are they so scared of this surgery? And if it doesn't work.
But you get why they're scared, because it never happened on a hockey player. Like,
okay, I do. But so have a lot of other surgeries. Orthoscopic knee surgery, right? The one that took 6 months to rehab is now all of a sudden 3 weeks because you're able to put a camera in there and clean out cartilage. I mean, something has to be always first here. Just suck it up, Buffalo. And by chance, if the worst case scenario is it doesn't work and he has to retire, then write the contract off on your insurance and call it a day.
$10 million just gone. Just write it off.
It's not Pegulas will be happy. It's not real money. It's insured. There's only a few big contracts per team that are insured. Jack's would be one of them.
I love the fact that you and I are talking medicine.
Our
combined post-secondary education is what? 3 months for the two of us?
Darren, I blew out my knee and there was a doctor that told me it's bad. I'm not sure, you know, where your career is. And I went back to Philadelphia. The Flyers gave me this doctor who was like the wild, wild west, Dr. Greg. And this guy was just did whatever he wanted to. Just don't worry about a thing. I'm going to make you as good as new. He tells me right before the surgery, he holds up what I think it looks like a chicken breast from like my grocery store. He goes, take a look at your new knee. And I'm like, wow. And he says, yep, I'm putting this in. And, you know, you're going to be able to run the New York Marathon one day with it. True story. And I ran it at age 47. So, but I had no idea. And it was a cadaver. It was an Achilles tendon I was looking at. I had no idea something foreign was even going in my knee. My parents didn't know. They were in the waiting room in Philadelphia. And yet I'm just like, maybe that makes me dumb, naive.
Would you have let him do that had you been told that before you were lying on the gurney?
That's an excellent question. And maybe, but I was in the, I trust mode. These guys are the Philadelphia Flyers. They got the best doctors in the world. I'm just going to trust the process. And my knee to this day, I blew out my ACL. I ripped up my meniscus and MCL. It was a disaster. And my knee in 1989 went under this procedure to put an Achilles tendon, strongest tendon in the body, in to replace my ACL. And my knee has never swollen once. And I got to do everything I wanted to do on this knee. Now, did I lose a little bit of a step playing? Was my skating just a little bit off? Yes, it was. I never really, and you never really are the same player again when you have major surgery. You're just not. If we're talking about a percentage points, maybe, but my skating never felt as well as it did when I was scoring like 60 goals in junior. I just know that, but it was still enough for me to play the game that I loved and fulfill a dream come true. It was the trust level at that point, and I went for it. And again, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It could have been a situation where my knee rejected a foreign substance, and I could have gone on to also say that I trusted you. It was my mistake, and my knee has never been the same. Never allowed me to play, and I have to sue. You know, and that happens all the time. But I was lucky. I trusted. And it worked in my scenario. But there's others, Darren. I'm not naive. There's others. Glenn Seabrook was a top pick for the Philadelphia Flyers, and he did not have a situation where it worked out for him with his shoulder. And he, at one point, I think, had one of the biggest settlements in NHL history, if I'm not mistaken, on a shoulder that never recovered because of a surgery. So I'm just sharing my story.
Did you ever ask where they got the cadaver, the Achilles, from?
Yeah. Motorcycle accident, 24 year old. You know, I said, could he run the 100 meter dash under 10 seconds? Because I'd like to be a lot quicker, but didn't work out that way.
Wow, it's amazing. Like, that, just a nothing related to this podcast, but organ donation and all that, it can save and help people in so many different ways.
Darren,
sign that card.
I'm living proof of that, 100%.
Rangers, are you surprised?
they got a good team. I don't know if they're ready, Darren, by any stretch to push good, for a though, playoff right? spot. But Shesterkin's the real deal.
You think that he's ready to take over and carry that mantle? Eh?
I think he's got a chance to be a goalie that could end his career and be in the same family as Eddie Jackman, Mike Richter, Henry Lundqvist. I think Shesterkin has that ability to hold this for the next 8 or 10 years or even more. I think he's that talented, but I don't know if that'll happen, but I think he's got the ability to move into the Rangers have been pretty good all these years, you know, between the pipes ever since I think Mike Richter, you know, and John Van Beesbrook had that chance in the early 90s. And then of course, Ricky took over, still the only goalie to get the Rangers over the hump. But Lundqvist is, as we all know, regarded one of the best in history. Unfortunately, he didn't win a Stanley Cup, but I think Shesterkin's that talented that he can get himself in the mix.
Okay, seriously, can you walk into a room and Lundqvist is there and call him Henry?
Yeah, I can. I'm much older than him. Henry! Wipe your feet, Henry.
I've never heard anybody call him Henry before.
Oh, yeah. Well, the king. Everybody calls him the king.
King.
But
or Hank.
Don't you need to win the Stanley Cup to really be called a king?
He's doing some TV. Have you seen
it? I know.
He's good.
Oh, my God. He's good. And he's good looking.
Yeah.
And he wears great clothes. I hate him.
Ticks me off.
Yeah, really pisses me off, too.
And you can't say anything bad about him because then he just holds up his career numbers and
yeah,
Olympic gold medalist.
I know. No. He's, and if you're in New York, they'll hold him in the same regard. Like he's a step up from any other player, right? He's regarded in New York right up there with like, you know, a Jeter and, you know, other top athletes. He was always the face of the Rangers probably 10, 15 years now and rightfully so, but there'll always be a part of him that like any other player that has, you can't have a better career except there's one thing missing, the Stanley Cup.
One table left at the best restaurant. Messier and Lundqvist both want it.
Yeah.
Who gets it in New York City?
Well, one has a wedding ring and the other one has a Stanley Cup ring. Which one's a little more special?
To the fan or the wife?
Good point. Good point. Darren, the Stanley Cup will always sit at the very top of the priority list.
Are you having fun on the radio?
I love the radio. Because you have plenty of time to talk. And, you know, I mean, we worked with each other for what, 15, 17 years? 20. I just wrote off 5 years that I worked with you that I couldn't remember. But we worked from day one together because we started out on the Hockey News, brought to you by the Hockey News.
Hockey News, yeah.
Right?
Brilliant title. Sponsored their own show. Way ahead of their time.
So we had started there. And then we worked our way all the way up. But look at the conversation we had on your show right now. Like, have we ever sat and talked in 20 years? Did I ever tell you the story about the chicken fillet that's in my knee right now?
No, never.
Never. So that's the beauty of these podcasts and a two-hour show that I have with Justin Bourne on the Fan 590. Please give it a listen. You can download it anywhere you want on any of your platforms. It's called Real Kipper and Bourne. And yeah, we get to talk a lot about the Leafs, but we also talk about Eichel and everything else. So it's still the best way to express yourself and really get into the finer details of hockey and my career and everything. And to answer your question, yes, I really, really love it.
That's amazing. And you show up, you do it, and you're not running around doing all the other stuff now. So that's even better.
Yes. And got time to laugh. TV.
And, no time.
And you know it because I watched you last night. Here, Darren, 30 seconds till commercial break. Come on. I need more time in front of the refrigerator than 30 seconds. I can't do anything in 30 seconds. It's not fun to do something really fast and throw it to commercial break. It's hard to be creative. It's hard to find out what you're really thinking in 30 seconds. That's why I love this a lot more than TV.
I wanted to get to commercial break because I didn't want anybody else to get hurt before we went to break. That's
so what's the mood in Vegas right now?
It's disappointing. I think there's an acknowledgement that you've got six guys in the power play that are all out of the lineup at the same time. I think the expectations are that you got to get a couple of wins out of it, though. You got to find a way to win. Maybe instead of 500, it's 350 winning percentage, and that's where the expectations are. Now you can't just roll over, and not that the team is rolling over, but you got the coaching staff and the players are trying to figure out a way to get one or two wins through this stretch.
As the fan base over the fact that the face of this franchise since its inception is no longer there and Marc-Andre Fleury, does it almost calm the waters to see him unsuccessful in Chicago up until this point?
Kip, I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't hurt. Seeing the problems in Chicago and the numbers that Mark has from a fan base perspective, and I'll speak directly to that, it takes away that avenue of frustration to be able to say, look what he's doing over there. We should have kept him. Like, that's not there. You can't use that that avenue. So I think that that's in a weird, painful way is helping at least quiet the social media side.
Yeah. And then Leonard wakes up the social media side on occasion.
On occasion. But we're going to chat about Robin Leonard in a little bit. I did an interview with him before the season started, but that's going to come up right after we're done here. And he talked about the Olympics. He talks about winning the Stanley Cup and how emotional that will be because of the journey. Like it has nothing to do with the tweet because it was actually done before that. But it's a cool conversation. He's a different guy. I would have been fascinated to watch and different in a unique sense. I would have been fascinated to watch you and Robin work together because I actually think you guys would be buddies.
I have no doubt that I could be buddies with Robin Leonard.
Yeah,
for sure. But I would also help him out in terms of the best vehicle that he could use to get out his message and not certainly, cause a ripple effect that would be unnecessary. And I think that's probably happened to him in the last little while, especially when he starts talking about scenarios like Alain Vigneault and what's happened with him in the past, all of that. Like there's just, I think, better ways for him to get his message across without leaving so many ripples. And I think if he can start managing that a little better, then his voice would probably be even heard better, because there isn't, the ripple effect that I speak of.
It calmed pretty fast. I mean, it was a big story for like 5 or 6 days, biggest story in the league. And then it did quiet.
Well, he also spoke to the NHL.
Yeah.
And I think the message was clear. Call us. Don't do it this way.
Right.
And I think he listened. I think part of the reason why it got quiet is because he didn't follow through with his threat of releasing a tweet a day. And good on him, because that was just dig a deeper hole for everybody. And there's better ways to get your message through on your concerns. And sometimes it doesn't have to play out publicly, Darren. It can be behind the scenes. And if the NHL got to Robin and made that abundantly clear that we can hear your voice and we can work on your concerns, but we don't have to air dirty laundry all the time publicly, we can do that. And I hope that's the case here.
Medical talk, life coaching, you do it all, man.
I'll give you a discount too on my hourly fee.
Continue to have fun. When you said the Shesterkin thing earlier, I thought your screen froze. I didn't realize that you were done talking. I kept waiting for your feed to come back, and then I realized you were done talking. You were
I was done talking. Yes. Sometimes I take this is the best thing about a podcast. It's like, you can just stop talking.
Yeah,
you don't have to talk all the time. Just stop. Shesterkin, good goalie. That's it.
Tell Messier I'd like to sit with him at that table when he gets it. All right. Thanks. Thanks, buddy.
You got to work on getting a ring on your own. All right. That's the key here. You cannot borrow. You and Gary got to get your own rings.
Yeah. I'm working on it last night. I'm working on it. Okay. Appreciate it. You're the best. And I'm going to lean on you a little bit more now that you're back on the radio. You'll be our Toronto correspondent. How's that sound?
All right. I can live with that.
Okay. Okay.
Thanks, Darren.
See you, buddy. Let's slide into it because we promoted the Robin Leonard conversation coming up, and we'll bring you this, but just a couple of notes on this discussion that I had with Robin Leonard. It was conducted the weekend before the start of the National Hockey League season, so going into that weekend, and it was before Robin Leonard tweeted out his series of comments. So it has nothing to do with that aspect. If you're looking for juice or scuttlebutt on that aspect of Robin's activism, it's not there. You'll be disappointed. Still listen to the interview, but it's not there. I also want to make the point that this interview was unedited. It hasn't been touched. It hasn't been altered in any form. So there's nothing that's been taken out or that could have been controversial to deal with anything. It is running in its truest form from beginning to end. And there's some great things in this from Robin Leonard. And we were really excited to bring it, but we just wanted to wait until things calm down a little bit so you could absorb everything. Because quite frankly, our conversation that we had with Robin, if we would have published it at the time, would have been lost in all the noise. So now that things have settled, off the ice, here is Robin Leonard on The Chirp with Darren Millard. So this is a little different because, Robin, I've been around you, but I haven't really, really been around you because of COVID. We work with the same team, Golden Knights. Do I call you Lenny? Do I call you Robin? Do I call you Panda? Let's get that out of the way.
Call me Robin more formally in a podcast, I think. You're Lenny. Most people in the team call me Lenny. That's what most people call me. No, up to you.
All right. How well do I have to get to know you before I can call you Lenny?
Not very well. There's a lot of people that I don't know to call me Lenny.
Where did Panda come from? Who initially named you that and why?
No, it was more, it wasn't, it was a little bit when I was in Chicago. I said, the other day on a podcast, I'm a pretty heavy guy and watched Kung Fu Panda with my kids and kind of saw myself a bit in him. He was able to move and do all these crazy things, and he was just really kind of I just kind of felt like my spirit animal a little bit.
One thing I admire about your game is like you're a great skater, man. Really good. Has it always been the case, or did you have to really work on that part?
I'm a great skater.
Yeah, I think you're a good skater. You don't think so?
I don't know. If someone asked me what I'm good at, I don't think that skater would be. I think I'm pretty fluid. You know what I mean? I'm not very boxy when it comes to my skating. I don't do these. A lot of goalie coaches and goalies are very boxy underskating is always like T pushes. It's so structured that where I've learned to kind of just more float around. That's why I kind of don't sharpen my skates that often, or I don't sharpen them very sharp because I'm heavy. I use my toes a lot, but I like to be able to not do a big push. I kind of just float sideways so I can focus on the puck at the same time. I think a lot of goalies do a T push and then focus on the puck. I try to be able to move and focus on the puck and the play at the same time.
How much thinking do you do during a game when you're facing a shooter?
Quite a bit. I think more now since after, I think I've always been trying to be more of a reading goalie. You know, I think when I just get into the league, I think a lot of goalies gets a little bit, what can you say, a little bit, I wouldn't say scared in terms of the puck, but like everything, I remember my first development camp, my first few camps, like everything was just going top shelf, you know, and it was a lot better shooters and stuff like that. And I started like thinking like, you can't just react to the shots, you know, you can't just let people come close and think you're going to catch it, you know? So I think from early when I got here, I understood that I had to start working on like reading the players, reading the shots, and kind of developed that with looking at Craig Anderson quite a bit in Ottawa. You know, I think he was one of the best reading goalies that I've ever played with, and I learned a lot from him. But I was still too much all over the place when I was in Ottawa, and even quite a bit in Buffalo. And but I developed that reading skills quite a bit over the course of my career. And then I think everything changed in Long Island when I worked with Piero Greco, because what he did so well with me was I had the skills of reading the play, but I was still, you know, thinking too much about where in the crease I was and all that stuff. So I didn't have that much time, where he just kind of worked just on my angles and make things that I didn't have to move as much. And so that's why Piero is such a good goalie coach, where he just slowed the game down for me so I could use my skills of reading a lot more. And yeah, that's where I think it's gotten better.
You ever want to be a goalie coach or a coach of any kind?
I don't know. That's a conversation for another day. But yeah, it's one thing that I've been thinking about is you kind of, after your career or whatnot, you know, you've been around guys, been around a group for a long time. I think that's what a lot of people struggle with after a career. And I think I would be like to be a part of something in hockey after my career, but in what capacity, I don't know.
Who's the best shooter you've faced?
I mean, there's different types of shooters, you know, it's not a best shooter per se. I would say that,
guys have heavy shots. Guys have quick shots. Yeah, guys have shots coming down the wall. Yeah,
exactly. That's the thing. Like you have fast shots, heavy shots, accuracy. I mean, I would say the best all-rounded shooter that I would say would be Patrick Kane, you know, because what he does so different than anyone else is, you know, during the course of let me play with a team for 1 year, I know where everyone shoots. So in practice, generally, they don't score much because I know I can see where they're shooting. But Kane, you never know where he's shooting. He shoots 5-hole over your pad, between your arms. He goes high. He goes, you know, there's, and his accuracy is insane. So it's very hard to save him. You know, I think if I would say the worst, you know, save percentage in practice against any player, it's him. Then I would say William Karlsson has a really good shot. You know, if he hits his spot, he usually scores in practice. But then in terms of like heavy shots, I mean, Pacioretty is probably up there. You know, usually every time I save it, it's a bruise on my arm. So no, it's different types of shooters for sure.
You look good. There was a lot of conversation about when you came into camp. Are you fascinated by other people's fascination? Does it bug you at all?
No, it's what it is. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, I'm trying to change a little bit too. You know, I just turned 30. I want to, you know, longevity of the career, of my career, and, you know, injuries, stuff like that. Just try to be a little bit better shape. But in the end of the day, I don't think it's going to change my game a little bit. But generally, I don't know too if it's going to be better or worse, or, you know, it's the same. I find ways to play no matter, like, if I'm a little heavier or not, you know, just find a way to stop the puck, you know.
How would it help you being a little bit lighter? Like, what could you do different?
I mean, obviously, in a situation of rebounds and, you know, like some, you know, extreme scoring chances and stuff like that, it could definitely helps. But again, when I'm a little heavier, I just make sure that I try to play in a way where I don't put myself in those positions, but it always happens anyway. So that's where it's going to help me. Maybe just the thing where, you know, if I go and get a lot lighter than what I am even right now, might be a little bit too fast, and, you know, timing and stuff like that might get screwed up a bit. To happen 1 year in Ottawa, I came in a really light, and I just kind of lost my game a little bit, you know. So we'll see. We have a good plan. I feel pretty good right now, so we'll see how everything develops.
Is that a movie screen behind you in your theater room?
Yeah, it's kind of my theater room. Computer here that I play some, I used to play some Call of Duty on it, but mm-hmm. I haven't had time lately.
What do you do to hang out when Robin wants to relax?
No, it's different. I mean, it's been different the last few years with COVID when you've been locked in and stuff. I've been, you know, it's been more different types of stuff. I like to go and do things, and now finally I get to enjoy Vegas a little bit, you know, go with some of the guys, go to some shows and all types of things. So it's kind of nice that it's opened up again.
UFC, you were spotted at that, and you're doing some training. What's that like? Because was it 5 years ago that you did some MMA training?
Yeah, no, I used to do quite a bit, but it was a while ago. Started again this summer. It's good. It's a good training tool. So losing weight, stuff like that, and it's fun. So it's not that you have to drag myself to the gym, you know. It's something that I think it's, you know, it's fun to do, so it's a little bit easier.
What kind of fighter are you?
I just go for it, you know.
Yeah
I'm pretty aggressive, but yeah, no, it's good to let off some steam.
Are you a striker or a wrestler?
Nah, more a striker, more pretty good kicks. Wrestling is tough, man. Like some of the jiu-jitsu guys, I mean, they're insane. You know, you go against, remember in Buffalo when I did it the most, you know, I was wrestling with some jiu-jitsu guys, man. If they want to tap you out, they tap you out in not very long time. You know, they're insane.
You gonna call on Jake Paul again?
Nah, he's doing his thing. It's good for him. Still don't like him, but I respect what he's doing. He's making some good money, but we are in vastly different weight divisions. You know, even when I'm, let's call me light, I'm a lot heavier than what he is. And yeah, I don't think it would have turned out well for him.
I like it when every now and then I'll get a note from somebody and say, hey, see what Robin's saying on Twitter. You watch an event and you just get engaged yourself and you let it flow. Is that just being natural and being a fan, or is that something conscious, brand and et cetera?
No, it's definitely not for branding, because, you know, usually what I say, it's like a, I don't even know. So say 50-50, people hate it. So some 50-50 loves it. But, you know, I just try to be myself, you know. It's one of those things, you know, I would never let anyone or any type of marketing team handle my Twitter account, you know, because that's me. Well, what I say there is it's my word. So I usually just try to tweet whatever I feel like. What's on my mind.
Do you enjoy the social media, or is it motivating for you?
I mean, it depends. Depends on the situation. I mean, I do. I mean, let's be honest. Social media is ruthless, and it's a lot of noise. But it can also be. I mean, it's a good way of expressing yourself. It's just wish that the. You know, at the end of the day, I wish that Twitter and, you know, all these social medias would put your passport in, get an account. You understand what I mean? It's too many people that can hide behind false identities and say whatever they want. There should be some accountability on it. I don't mind it.
Tell me, because even I read it and some of the things people say, it rankles me. So how do you handle it? How do you manage to process that?
I think when you don't process it the right way, you kind of forget that the 95% of the people talking on it are they don't know anything. You understand what I mean? You when you lose that sight of the fact, if you lose the sight of that, all these people that says the crazy things are probably they're whoever, you know, but they would also never say that to your face. You know, it's happened many times, you know, when someone's crossed the line on like a direct message or whatnot, you know, Sage loves this. I'll tweet right back at them. You know, if they cross the line, come meet me, you know, come say it to my face. And usually then you get an apology and they're a fan all of a sudden. It happens most of the time. So you try not to engage with it too much. In the end of the day, there's limits. There's limits of what you can say to people.
Hey, what was the Sahara like?
Oh, it was good. I was with some friends. We were traveling around to a few different spots, and we were down in Morocco, and we figured, I hadn't been out there. So we took a car, and we just pretty impulsively, we felt like we wanted to experience it. So we went out there and spent a couple of days. It was really peaceful.
You just camp in the middle of the desert?
Yeah, you know they had some really nice camps, so we just booked one of these camps. You went there, you took a car ride, and then you had to take some buggies out a few hours into the desert, and it was a really nice camp. Actually,
you didn't see any snakes, did you?
No, I didn't see anything of that.
Were you surprised when Mark Stone let the snake story get out the other day?
No, not surprised. I'm more surprised about the. It wasn't a big deal. You know, it wasn't. Everyone turned it that I caught some. I didn't. You know, I was just looking for some, and there was some snakes a few weeks later. I don't think was related to me, but it just seems that's the case. You know, something happens. It's my fault.
Well, I'm just more curious about, like, I wouldn't know a snake hole to save my life, but you were well aware of this and just decided to dig him up. Like,
yeah, no, as I said, Ryan Reeves, he doesn't like snakes. So I wanted to find one for him. Yeah. So no, I know my way around animals, so I wouldn't have heard any one of it, of them, you know, just wanted to see what I could find.
Do you have pets? Do you have animals?
I got two dogs right now. Yeah.
Your mask. You just got a new mask. What's on it? Your mask guy?
No, this one was kind of a little bit different, a little bit more Vegas than I had before. But you know, usually I have my pandas on it, but it was covered a little bit this time. I have a few things, sort of mental health stuff that I work with. I have the three different phases of the kind of represent the bipolar disorder that I have, and then I still have the on the back plate, still have that kind of symbol that relates to me, you know, with the feel with the eye, with it's kind of with prism bars, so it's kind of resembles mental health quite well, I think. So no, it's kind of a little bit the same themes.
You know, your legacy may be the mental health advocacy, despite being Vezina finalist, Jennings Trophy winner, number one goaltender in the National Hockey League. It's it's quite incredible what you've been able to do on that front. You okay with that umbrella instead of being the athlete legacy?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm not playing in the NHL for a legacy per se, you know. That's not never how I've been, you know. Let's make the NHL and people remember me or whatnot. This is what I want to do. This is my life. This is, I love to play hockey. And it's a, we all want to win the Stanley Cup, right? I don't want to win the Stanley Cup for the reason to have my name on the cup. You know, I want to win for the reason of the experience of going through that climb with a group of guys, you know, the actual journey of it, the actual journey and how to get there is the big thing for me. I think it's not as much of, oh, I want to put my name on the cup so someone looks, he won the cup. You know, it's not how it is for me. It's more personal, you know. It's like, it's just about like any goals in life, right? Like you really want to win with a group. That's what I love with team sports. That's what I love with the Stanley Cup. It's a very hard trophy to win. It takes a lot of grind. It takes a lot of pain. And it takes a hell of a team, you know, and to be a part of that. And that's what I think I'm thriving for. And that goes to the legacy points with the mental health and stuff. I'm not doing it so someone's going to, oh, look, he did that for other people. Like I'm trying to be genuine about it, you know. I do a lot of things behind the scenes. One of the big things I think needs to be done for mental health is people speaking about it, because that's what's missing. But I'm not a guy that's going to, you know, try to go to some hospital or bring camera team with me to show people that I'm at the hospital. Or there's a lot of things that I do behind the scenes with a lot of people that I'm not just going to bring up to light to people's, oh, look how nice guy this guy is. You understand what I mean? That's not the point. It's genuine, and it affects me mostly negatively, you know? So I don't think anyone can question that, because it's a hard topic and it's a hard fight to fight, because you get a lot of enemies when speaking up honestly about these things.
Are you happy right now?
Yeah, I'm really happy. I'm really, really good place. Happier with the COVID situation, for sure. The COVID situation was hard for all of us, I think. And it was hard on me too. You know, it's not worse for me than anyone else. But, you know, with my conditions and stuff, you know, COVID forced me to do things that's really against my rehabilitation plan. You know, one of the worst things for mental health and bipolar in general is isolation. And I was in isolation for a year and a half. And that's tough, you know, with medicine and staying even and all that types of things. So, I feel a lot better right now.
Other side of COVID, got the contract and you're the number one goaltender. I don't know whether from the outside you've been in a better place. Is that fair?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's, I mean, it's not about fair. I just don't think it's right. In the end of the day.
But it looks like it's come together for you, buddy.
Yeah, it's been together for me for 4 years, you know, to be honest. It's just been a little bit, yeah, negotiations, stuff like that hasn't worked out, and for different causes and all the types of things, you know. A lot of people, a lot of interviews since I come back this year, it's like, yeah, you're number one guy now. I'm like, why? You understand what I mean? I mean, it's still... We still have two really good goalies. Brasser is a really good goalie. He's coming here to push me. I'm pushing him, and it's no different than I got traded here. And they started me, and I was the starter in the playoffs in the bubble. I started opening night last season. It was a little bit of a special season with no camp, so we started splitting, and then I got injured, and Fleury had a hell of a year. But, you know, it wasn't like... Let's be honest here. It was planned that I was going to play a lot more last year, but I got injured. Mm-hmm. And that's how it should be. You know, in the end of the day, if I don't play well and Brasser plays well, I expect him to play. So it's nothing different now than any of the other years. I play with a lot of good goalies, and in the end of the day, I hate, just look at goalies around the league that's been really good in tandems, or, you know, young goalies that breaks into the league. They play really good, and then they get their long contract, become the number one goalie, and they don't have any competition. How many people, you know, they usually take a downhill turn, you know? That's not the mentality that I have, you know? No one in a team in Vegas especially should have that I am the number one center. Because if you're not scoring, you're not the number one center in the month. Or you might not be on a team. If I don't have a good year this year, it's pretty likely I'm not on the team the next year. And that's the reality in this team. And that's what I love about this team. They do everything to win.
Yeah, but I could counter, the reality is you've got the great contract and you have the more experience, and you've been around for a couple of years, that you would be the number one.
No, I can counter with Fleury had a lot more experience too.
Yeah.
You know, this is my 12th year. He had a bunch more than that. So in the end of the day, you can counter Tom Brady. He has the most experience and he didn't get a contract with the Patriots. It don't matter, man. It's what have you done for me lately? Piero Greco taught me that well. NHL is, and sports in general, are flagpoles. Everyone's are flagpoles. It's just you, when you learn that and you come to terms with that, it becomes a lot easier for you, because people's minds go where the wind turns. End of story. You know, it's how it is in every sport. And it's always been.
That's the most fascinating discussion debate I've ever had with somebody, almost reversed, like trying to argue that you are the number one guy and you're going the other way.
No, but it's not.
I understand.
Listen, in my head, I'm the best. When I play in a game, I'm the best in the world. I'm the best I've ever been, you know, when I play. But, you know, you get, in the end of the day, I'm not sitting saying I'm not. I know I'm good. I know how good I am. I know how good I can be. I don't have that mindset of, oh, this is my net now. You understand what I mean? Like, it's, I got to deserve the net no matter what, year to year. It's how it is. It's the fact of the game, you know? If, especially in this organization, if I don't play well, they will find someone who will. It should be that. It should be that way. Because in the end of the day, you know, you're trying to win a Stanley Cup. And if you don't have the pieces to do it, they'll find pieces to do it.
Do you want to go to China
for the Olympics?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, no, it would be cool. Talk to the national team. I mean, we'll see here kind of how the season unfolds and stuff like that. I just same when it comes to the national team, I just want to be treated fair. If I play best here, I want to play, you know. It's been a little bit with the national teams, with me in Sweden, my narrative around me throughout my career, it's just been predetermined positions of goaltending and about me, which I don't think has been fair. So if they treat me fair, I'll definitely do it. And I want to do it for my country and all that stuff. But I'm not going to waste my time either, you know. So if I'm the better goalie during the season and they want me to play and they say that I'm going to play, then I will play. If I'm the better goalie this season and they say that someone else is going to play, then I'll rather go on vacation.
Yeah, it's been a while since you played for the national team.
I haven't played a national team game with the big boys. I did with the juniors, but not with the main team. There's always been, a couple of injuries certain seasons. The one season when I was going to go, I went to rehab, and a few times I've said no. So in the end of the day, we'll see. If they want me, I'm there. Just got to be fair.
They you told them that, and they understand that?
I don't know if they understand it, but I told them that, yeah.
What was their reaction?
No, it wasn't anything special. I mean, they might not agree with it. It's just how it is. I would love to go and win with Sweden. I know I could go and win with Sweden, but again, it's just been this predetermined position about me. And it's always been Lundqvist and all that stuff too, right? So, I mean, it's not much argument with that. But even when Lundqvist, like when it hasn't been Lundqvist, it's they have other goalies in the hierarchy that they think are better. So if they think other goalies are better, go with that. You know, I'm not the coach.
Do you feel pressure?
No. I know it's my most pressured season, 100%, because of the narrative and the whole thing that's been built up here, but I don't feel it because, again, that's not how I look at it. You know, I'll prepare as good as I can now. I'll try my best. And usually when I do that, it'll work out. But, you know, I can't do more than my best. So in the end of the day, it's what it is. I try not to get into that too much and what people's expectations and stuff are, because no one's expectation is going to be higher than mine. You know,
what are your expectations, Robin?
To win the cup. There's no nothing else. There's no Vesna. There's no wins. There's no statistic. There's no nothing of goals that I have than to win the cup. The rest is doesn't matter. It really don't.
What kind of smile do you think I'd see on your face? Because I don't see a smile a lot.
If we win, no, I smile inside a lot. I mean, you know, media and out and talking and podcast stuff, like it's tough, you know. It's always turns into like a lot of mental health talk and all that types of things. You know, I'm pretty, you know, again, I'm a little moody back and forth, obviously, but in the end of the day, I think I'm pretty a happy guy and fun guy to be around, and especially now with a little bit more normal times. But I don't know if the question, if I would smile if we win the cup, is that the question?
Yeah. How big the smile?
I don't think I would smile. I think I would cry, to be honest. I mean, this is my 12th year. You know, you want to win. You know, it's that's why you do this. And it would be amazing.
Be a hell of a journey, wouldn't it? Like,
yeah, it would. It would, 100%.
Great hanging out with you, even though we're in the same city. It's good to be chatting with you again.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
The Olympic comments will be the headline out of that conversation. Thanks to Robin Leonard for stopping by. That's a different conversation with Robin. And I loved what he said. And I'm so happy that we got into it about winning the Stanley Cup and the legacy that he will be remembered as in the National Hockey League. But winning because of the journey, not because of the ring. And we've heard it said before, but for some reason that just gave it a really true human foundation. And you could hear the emotion with him, because quite frankly, you just listen to Robin. He doesn't say things just to say things. He says things if he believes in them. So I appreciate Robin. Also Nick Kyprios for stopping by. Want to congratulate everybody over at NHL at the Rink podcast from NHL Productions, producer Bob Bender, part of that. They hit the century mark, 100 episodes. I have no idea how many episodes we're in. We're probably at 450. No, we're not even close to that. No, 100 episodes is a huge accomplishment, and they knock out of the park every week on NHL at the Rink. You can find them on all your platforms or on NHL.com on the main page there. So at the Rink with Dan and Sean, and they had Donnie Granato on last week, and he is a great story right now. We had him at the end of last year, and we talked a little bit about what occurred as he took over with the Buffalo Sabres, and you saw it turning, and now there's some real fun. I don't know whether it's going to last, quite honestly. They've got some holes that they need to take care of, but I'm happy for the fans, and I'm happy for Don Granato that they've got off to a great start with everything that's happened and the distractions around that organization, and for Dan and Sean to celebrate their 100th episode with a really cool story. So check them out. A new episode drops every Wednesday, but they're over the century mark, which, given all the work that goes into these things behind the scenes with Bob and company, that's cool, managing all those schedules. So congratulations, big stick tap to them. And thank you for listening. Leave us a comment, leave us a like, leave us a rating. Your endorsement of this podcast is what makes it function and climbs up the chart. So if you like listening to the Robin Leonard interview or Nick Kyprios, want to hear more, we're going to get some of my buddies on here a little more often, and we'd love to hear your slant comment on it. So give us your opinion. And until next week, I'm Darren Millard. On behalf of Bob Bender and the entire crew of The Chirp with Darren Millard, thanks for listening.